thank you for the introduction, and good morning to everyone. For my talk this morning, I'm going to start with a brief introduction. Then I'm going to state our objectives, go over the materials and methods, explain and discuss the results, and then end with some conclusions. The Japanese beetle was first introduced into the northeastern United States in the early 1910s, and since then it has continued to spread south and west across the United States. And in 1997, it was first recorded in northwest Arkansas. The typical Japanese beetle life cycle begins with the adults emerging in June, where they will feed and mate. The females will oviposit in the soil, and the larvae will develop in the soil, feeding on roots of turf grasses. Now, every year, Japanese beetles cause around $500 million in economic damage, and $1 billion will be spent to help control this pest. Since the late 1990s, Japanese beetles have become an established pest in many areas in Arkansas. And today, insecticides continue to be the traditional method of control for this insect, although it is not always effective at controlling the larval stage. And with this in mind, along with an increasing national interest to reduce our reliance on broad-spectrum insecticides, other effective means of control are needed. And the manipulation of a pest's behavior, such as feeding, mating, or ovipositing, is a promising area of future research. And it's the area we decided to focus on, and in particular, oviposition behavior. And we chose this because past research suggests that Japanese beetles are selective in their oviposition site decisions. This makes it an excellent target to manipulate this behavior by altering potential oviposition sites, which in the case of Japanese beetles are turf grasses. And we hypothesized that most research that's been done on Japanese beetles has been conducted on cool season grasses. So the interactions of Japanese beetles and cool season grasses of the northeast and upper midwestern states is where most research has been done. And that's where larval densities are higher than what we see in more southern states like Arkansas. So we hypothesize that there may be some physical or chemical component of these warm season grasses that may be deterring Japanese beetle oviposition and contributing to the lower larval densities we see in the south. And so our objectives for this research were to determine whether Japanese beetles displayed an ovipositional preference among the common turf grass species in Arkansas, and also to identify whether these turf grasses are suitable or whether they are possibly resistant to Japanese beetle oviposition. And so the turf grasses we used are here. I use the cool season grass tall fescue. And I use this not just as a sort of control, but also because this is the cool season grass common to northwest Arkansas. And I also use these three warm season grasses, which I refer to in my results as Zoysia, Bermuda, and Tifway. And I use these warm season grasses because they are common in Arkansas lawns, golf courses, or sports fields, etc. And we conducted these oviposition experiments in these plastic tubs you see here. We did a four-choice oviposition experiment where we tested the four turf grass species that I mentioned in the previous slide. However, in the event that Japanese beetles may only oviposit in that cool season grass, we also conducted a three-choice oviposition experiment to make sure that we are going to get information on those warm season grasses that we don't have much research on. And these turf grass cores were taken from mature field plots, and they were inserted into 5-centimeter diameter PVC pipes, which were randomly placed through the foam board into these bioassay arenas. The beginning of each experiment was when we added a slice of apple and one mated Japanese beetle onto that slice of apple. And we let that experiment go for 7 days. And after 7 days, we removed those turf grass cores and we went through the grass to look for eggs. and we did 30 replications of both the four-choice and three-choice oviposition experiments. Now, in the event that females wouldn't lay eggs in one or more of those turf grass species in choice experiments, we also conducted a no-choice experiment to determine suitability or a possible resistance. And these experiments were conducted in 10 centimeter diameter PVC pipes. And at the beginning of these experiments, we added a slice of apple again, but we added five mated females. And we let these experiments again go for 7 days, and after 7 days, we took the turf grass cores out and we looked through them for eggs. And we did 15 replications of these. And I want to mention that in one of those cages is only one of the four turf grass species, but we did 15 replications of each species. And this picture just shows what the turf grass cores looked like and kind of how we went through them gently to look for eggs. Moving on to the results and discussions, before I get into this, I want to mention that the statistical significant differences that you will see were all determined with a chi-square analysis. So this table right here is going to show the mean number of eggs per treatment. You'll see the treatment on your left, and I'm going to go through each of the four treatments separately, starting with the four-choice experiment. And if we're looking at preference and non-preference, we see here that females ovipositive significantly fewer eggs in Tifway, indicating a strong non-preference, and we see a preference for Zoysia and Fescue as oviposition resources. See a similar trend in the three-choice experiment, again, significantly fewer eggs in Tifway, indicating a strong non-preference, and significantly more in Zoysia. And then these data were confirmed with the no-choice oviposition experiment, where even when females were not given a choice where to oviposit, they still oviposited significantly fewer eggs in Tifway and significantly more in the cool season grass fescue. Now, this strong non-preference that we see even in the no-choice experiment may indicate there's a possible resistance being expressed in Tifway to Japanese beetle oviposition. Now, these experiments they can't give us the reasons for non-preference or a possible resistance. However, further analysis into data of just the choice experiments kind of gives us an insight into where the possible resistance may be expressed, and that's what I'm going to show in the next two slides, beginning with the four-choice oviposition experiment. And this first column you see is the data that we just went over previously, the mean number of eggs per treatment. And these next two columns are the exciting, the exciting data, and starting with the proportion of turf grass cores with female activity. And female activity was defined as the presence of a female or eggs in a turf grass core, or signs that females were digging in those turf grass cores among those four treatments. And what we see is that there's no significant difference in the number of cores that females were active in among these treatments. However, if we look at the proportion of cores that had eggs, we see that significantly fewer Tifway cores had eggs. And this may indicate that the possible resistance we see is expressed in the underground parts of the plant, that females are just as likely to go into Tifway as the other turf grass treatments, but they are leaving after expending that energy but without ovipositing. That seems very interesting. And we see similar results for the three-choice oviposition experiment. Again, no significant difference in the proportion of cores with female activity. But again, we see Tifway having significantly fewer cores with eggs. And we also see in Bermuda here that significantly fewer cores had eggs. And so what can we conclude from this? Well, we were able to obtain our objectives. We were able to determine preferences and non-preferences. And we see that Tifway, Japanese beetles show a strong non-preference to oviposit in Tifway, and they show a preference to oviposit in Zoysia and tall fescue. Now, as regards to a possible resistance in Tifway, that needs further research as to what those the reasons for possible resistance may be. The more precisely we can define that resistance, the more precisely and successfully we can implement it or artificially reproduce it. Also, we need to research how TIFWAY affects other developmental stages of Japanese beetles. Does that non-preference or does that resistance carry over to the larval stage? And finally, because turf grasses vary in their suitability, their susceptibility, tolerance, and resistance to other insect pests, we need to do studies on the effects of TIFWAY on other major turf grass pests before confidently recommending it as a cultural control agent in either a turf grass management program or in an agroecosystem as a cultural control, as a cover crop. And with that, I have lots of people to thank, and I would be happy to entertain any questions anyone may have.
Time for one quick question.
Dr. Root.
Did you note them feeding during the experiment? Did the females feed? I noticed you had apples, but did you note that they were feeding?
I didn't note that, and I don't know that I would really be able to tell because after the 7 days, you know, the apples kind of were getting brown, and but
food sources really impact the fecundity of the females. That's why that's an important area.
Yeah. Yes.
You may have mentioned this, but where did you get your source beetle population from?
I got it from Fayetteville, Arkansas. Just we collected them in traps on our farm out there, the University of Arkansas.
One real quick.
What did you do to make sure that the soil conditions and composition was the same in different grasses?
Okay. She asked, what did I do to make sure the soil composition was the same? We used all of the established field plots that we took the turf grass cores from all had the same soil type to it. So, good question. Thank you.
Thank you, Jennifer.